Let's go in depth on all things Hawkeyes. This is Hawk Central. On Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3 KXNO.
Happy Wednesday, Hawkeye fans. Welcome into the latest edition of the Hawk Central Radio Hour. My name is Chad Lystico, Des Moines Register sports columnist, and we are on from 6 to 7 tonight here on Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3 KXNO. The second half of tonight's show, starting around 6:30, will be devoted to previewing the NCAA tournament for the top-seeded Iowa women's basketball team. Dargan Southard will join me for that conversation. But first, Tyler Tashman, we didn't really plan to talk much about Iowa spring football, but practice opens today for the Iowa football team, and it will do so without Caden Proctor. The news mushroomed on Tuesday that Caden Proctor had told head coach Kirk Ferentz that he abruptly was leaving the program. It all escalated very quickly to the point where we have some updates even this morning from our friends at KXNO Morning Rush. Tyler Tashman, my colleague at the Des Moines Register. Again, both of us were, you know, not looking forward to writing this type of story, but it certainly is a big story to start spring practice.
Yeah, and it's before spring practice even officially started. So that's not a great sign, I guess, for, you know, maybe this would be the most news that comes out. But no, I think that, you know, it's I usually tend to give people the benefit of the doubt of, like, you know, you don't know what's going on behind the scenes in their lives. You don't know what they're going through. It just, I think that the best way that I can put this, you know, maybe from an Iowa fan's perspective, is that it's difficult to find a positive spin on it. And, you know, it's because it's kind of felt like a similar situation as before. Is, hey, committed, you know, obviously a star at Southeast Polk, committed to Iowa, and then flipped to Alabama, you know, at the last moment, signed with them. And, you know, it kind of just feels like deja vu. So, you know, I don't feel like I'm in a position to, you know, bash someone for, you know, what they're doing with their life. And, but like I said, I just feel like, you know, it's hard to find, you know, from an Iowa perspective, you know, a real silver lining, you know, on this situation.
Yeah, I wrote a column last night after this went down. Tyler had the news story up. Yeah, I got a text, I would say, let me look at my phone. It was like late morning yesterday, just kind of alerted me. Hey, have you heard anything about this? You know, we're hearing from somebody I trust, one of the sources I trust, and it didn't take long. And we sent a message to the text group, kind of alerting that, yeah, Iowa staff not optimistic they can retain Caden Proctor. And then, I mean, I bet within 5 minutes of me sending that text, Scott Dockerman at the Athletic had a link up, and then I would say it was less than an hour that Kirk Ferentz had a statement that the university provided to you, Tyler. So, you know, basically wishing him well and that they were disappointed. Let's read the statement from Kirk Ferentz just so we have it. Scrolling. It is unfortunate that Caden has informed us of his intentions to leave our program today, Ferentz said. We wish him well in the future. I understand that Kirk is not happy. I mean, this is the second. Caden Proctor was committed to the Hawkeyes for 6 months, and then on the eve of signing day, December 19th, 2022, he flips to Alabama. That's one of those things. Again, it's an in-state five-star, biggest recruit in program history in terms of rankings, leaves, and it does leave a mark because you make plans based on this information, and this is the second time this has happened now. Iowa about to start spring practice with a new offensive coordinator, Tim Lester, who I'm sure was excited to have a bona fide left tackle, a guy that started 14 games for Alabama last year, a playoff team, a guy that your school's arm of the Swarm Inc., the corporate arm, has paid some money to be here. There was a lot of hoops that Iowa went through. In fact, Tyler Barnes even got his wrist slapped for tampering with Caden Proctor, tampering for nothing, right? And so it's just been a bizarre and quick twist, because I looked at the calendar, Tyler, and it was January 20th when we were at that basketball game between Iowa and Maryland, right? It was Iowa and Maryland?
I believe it was Purdue.
Oh, it was Purdue. That's right. It was a Purdue game. I knew it was a loss. Proctor showed up at the game and did interviews, and all of a sudden, here we are. It's like 2 months later. He's only been here 2 months, and now he's gone again.
Yeah, I was going to say, it doesn't even feel like that long ago that, you know, we kind of did a little media scrum with him at that Purdue game and talked to him. And it felt like sort of like, you know, I wasn't here during the whole high school process. You know, I wasn't on the beat yet, but it just felt kind of like maybe a full circle moment, kind of coming to peace with things where Iowa fans were very forgiving of how things went in high school. And hey, he wants to come home. And you know, I will say that, you know, I haven't had a lot of interactions with him, but just that one, I guess you could say, like, he seemed like a very genuine guy. Like he was very, you know, he was willing to talk to us. And but no, I mean, just how quickly things can change. And I think part of what makes this just so much of a gut punch is that Iowa just needed help on the offensive line. This is a unit that's really underperformed the last few seasons that could use a guy with that talent and frankly that experience at an SEC level. So you know, to not only protect whoever is going to be back there at quarterback this season, you know, in all likelihood Cade McNamara, assuming that he will be healthy by the opening game, but to pave, you know, running lanes for Caleb Johnson and LeSean Williams. So I think that, you know, that doesn't make the sting of it any better, that knowing that, man, this was just a real position group that Iowa needed help in, and, you know, in an offense that really, really can't afford too many hits. And that kind of just makes it sting even more.
Yeah, definitely. There were some updates just in the hours, even after Ferentz's statement. So Caden Proctor goes on Instagram with the Michael Jordan "I'm back" social media post in terms of heading back to Alabama. That is the rumor. That is the thought. However, Brad Heinrichs, the Swarm Collective CEO, also Swarm Inc., unpaid, by the way. I'm sure he's loving this unpaid role right now. It was on KXNO Morning Rush, our friends Ross Peterson and Travis Justice here on Des Moines Sports Station. And did a really nice interview. I encourage you guys to listen to the whole thing. It was probably about 15 minutes. And he clarified some stuff out there. And Brad is a straight shooter. I believe everything that he said here, that Caden Proctor, you know, did not take a bag of money and run. He said he did not get paid very much. He said he got paid not a dime from the Swarm Collective, which is what the fans donate to. That's kind of passing the hat. That kind of is evenly distributed among the football players, among the basketball players, et cetera. And the Swarm Inc. is kind of more the corporate arm, if you will, of you know, NIL, basically. So, you know, car dealership, bank, you know, taco place, whatever. They may hire a specific athlete to do a commercial and pay them for that. So Brad said he did not. Brad said Caden Proctor did not get very much this money, and that he there is contract language. There are contracts that allow, you know, the Swarm to not be on the hook to keep paying him if he's going to be starting at left tackle for, as he said, Nebraska or Alabama. So I guess that was a little bit. I think that was a good message to send, because I think there was a lot of information mushrooming out there that he stole $500,000 from Iowa fans and was running. It didn't sound like it was very much money. We don't know what that is. They're not going to tell us specifics, Tyler, but it, you know, I don't think it was as catastrophic, and it's not like it's crippling the Swarm here. It's not like that was a message received from Brad Heinrichs, who also said he isn't sure it's totally over yet. He said, you know, teenagers can change their minds quickly. However, Kirk Ferentz coming out with that statement as quickly as he did was almost to me saying, like, yeah, we've had enough of this. We're going to move on.
Yeah, and Kirk Ferentz, you know, he doesn't give the impression of a guy that, I mean, I was a program built on commitment. And you know, I think that's pretty reflective in the fact that, like, they didn't have a lot of guys enter the portal once it opened, and they retain a lot of guys. That's just the culture of the program. And, you know, it doesn't seem like the way that maybe Caden Proctor has handled it really fits into what I was looking for from a commitment standpoint of, you know, really wanting to be part of the program and the long-term future of it. I will also say, just from a larger picture view on this, like, this is just, I mean, from an NIL standpoint, I mean, it's just the Wild West out there. And that's why I think NIL is good for college athletics. And, you know, to a certain extent, I think the transfer portal is as well. But, like, there needs to be some type of structure to this, because, you know, you can get in these situations where, hey, it seems like the Swarm did a good job of kind of qualifying what the NIL efforts were going to be given to Caden Proctor, and with the understanding that, hey, we're not just going to give you this money and then, you know, you can leave or whatever it may be, or large sums of money, whatever that might be. But to me, that's just another indication of, like, there needs to be some type of structure to all this. There needs to be some type of rules. And look, this isn't like, I'm not the first one to say this, and I'm sure I'm not going to be the last, but, like, there's just so much out there in terms of NIL, and there just needs to be some rules or some structure, because otherwise it's just a kind of a mess to deal with on a lot of different fronts.
Yeah, this is going to lead to, not this in particular, but these types of situations are going to contribute to leading to where this is all going to go, where athletes become employees. Schools are actually paying these players. You know, I think they said on KXNO Morning Rush that Trev Alberts was on, you know, quoted recently as saying, you know, people are, you know, these universities are going to have $15, $20 million in their budget to pay athletes. And then on top of that, there are the Caitlin Clarks of the world, you know, that do get these contracts, you know, for other stuff like Nike, you know, like she does for Nike, Gatorade, whatever, that's on top of that type of pay. And that's kind of what the structure is meant to be now, sort of, with the collectives, like the, you know, the athletes get X amount of dollars for doing services, you know, charitable work at Iowa. And then on top of that, they can be sponsored, you know, for other things. So it's a little bit messy. It's complicated. Iowa's, you know, spring practices start today without Caden Proctor. As I said, if you were looking for any silver lining, better now than finding this out on May 29th, like you did, or whatever, with Charlie Jones a couple of years ago, where you're totally out of luck. So Iowa's got a little time to tackle shop. Caden Proctor cannot enter the transfer portal until April 15th. So there's still 3 weeks to go on this whole deal. Who knows? He's probably going to end up at Alabama, but I guess he's still got to, like, walk into classes and stuff for the next 3 weeks, or not. But you would think he'd want to stay academically eligible, all that stuff. I don't know. It's just crazy. We will hear from Kirk Ferentz officially on Tuesday to kind of introduce spring practice. So that'll be fun. Coming up next, Tyler and I will recap the Iowa men's basketball team's 91-82 NIT win against Kansas State on Tuesday night, and look at what's next for the Hawkeye men. You're listening to Hawk Central here on 106.3 KXNO. Welcome back to Hawk Central here on 106.3 KXNO. We got Dargan Southard coming up in about 10, 15 minutes to talk about the Iowa women's draw in the NCAA tournament. But first, Iowa men's basketball freshly defeats Kansas State at Carver Hawkeye Arena, 91-82. The crowd was small, as we would expect, Tyler Tashman, but I heard it was a really good crowd for the people that were there. That's kind of how NIT crowds work. Good atmosphere, really good performance for the Hawkeye men, and it was clear last night to me watching on TV. You were there, so you give me the feel there, but that these players really played hard and look like they have something to play for, you know, here in the NIT.
The word that Peyton Sanford used was fun, and you know, I thought that was a pretty accurate description of how it looked, and then, you know, based on what Peyton said, how it felt for Iowa. And look, this is a first round NIT game. I don't think you can necessarily pull a bunch of long-term, look at long-term implications of this game. Like, what does this mean in the large scheme of things? Because Iowa isn't even playing in the NCAA tournament, so you kind of have to take everything with a grain of salt in the understanding that they're not where they wanted to be at this point in the season. That being said, like, I just think that Tuesday was, a feel-good day for a team that could use it. Like, you know, Iowa really fought back to even give themselves a chance to get on the NCAA tournament bubble, and then just really had a rough two-game stretch, starting off in the regular season finale against Illinois and then against Ohio State in the Big Ten tournament. Iowa didn't lead for a single second of any of those two games. So, but it just felt like this kind of was just, if the last two games were just kind of some built-up frustration, like this was just kind of a nice exhale. It looked fun. There was passion. There was energy. Iowa shot almost 48% from three. They assisted on 20 of their 29 made shots from the field. Peyton Sanford was just, just had an absolute flamethrower to start the game, had a career high 30. So, it just, like I said, I don't know if it's not fair to draw a bunch of, long-term, implications to this performance, but like just for one night, like it just kind of felt like things went well for Iowa.
Yeah, they sure did, Tyler. Ben Cricke, you mentioned Peyton Sanford speaking of it. Ben Cricke, to me, was very notable. He had not done much in Iowa's last 15 games, under 10 points per game average, really wasn't rebounding the ball well, except for at Michigan State. Last night, he puts up 24 points on 9 of 15 shooting, 11 boards, 4 assists. That's what Iowa needed down the stretch. Owen Freeman, the other Hawkeye, in doubles with 10 points. And I just liked how Laji Dembele played. I liked how Patrick McCaffrey played. Josh Dix really didn't have to do much. Tony Perkins with 8 assists. Again, 19-14 record now. It's not where these guys wanted to be, but it is, they get to continue their season. They get to go for a 20th win. Next game is at Utah in the second round of the NIT. That could be, this is a team that could win an NIT championship, Tyler. I do think that. I don't know what it would mean. But it would be, I think fans would kind of warm up to a little bit of a run. I know a lot of teams opted out, whatever. What do you think it would mean? Again, we're not trying to say, applaud this team for whatever, but it was nice to see them play hard. In light of the Caden Proctor stuff, like watching a guy like Peyton Sanford, for example, like who just bleeds black and gold, is an interesting contrast. And that's not a slight against Caden, but it's just sort of like that's what college sports is kind of all about, and it's cool to see him giving his all, even if it is the NIT.
Yeah, I think, if I were to make a deep run in the NIT, like, again, it's not going to solve all the questions and maybe concerns that have been swirling around the program, how fair or not they have been, but it does give you some momentum heading into next season, where it feels like you really need to get back to the NCAA tournament and use this season truly as like a foundational launch pad to bigger and better things. But, it would get this team that is built, I think, to get experience in the NIT when you talk about having four freshmen in the regular rotation, Josh Dix, who's a sophomore. So, a lot of guys that just can really benefit from that experience on the court and just being able to play together more. And I think it would, brighten the outlook in fans' eyes of what they can be capable of in the future. And then, along with that, just the fact that, they get to keep playing, they get to continue to kind of show this passion. I don't think that for the teams that did opt out, Iowa can benefit, like I said, from this, and it doesn't feel like there's a lot that can, obviously a loss, but there's not that a lot of bad that can really come out of this.
So the top seed in Iowa's little bracket of the NIT is Villanova. So theoretically, you got to beat Utah, got to beat Villanova. We know the Utah game is going to be a road game. I don't think we'd have a game time on that yet, right? As we record this. Correct.
I don't think it's Saturday.
It'll be Saturday or Sunday. I think Saturday probably, but which is when the women play. also. So we'll see how that goes. But anyway, let's just talk real quick. I know this is probably needs more time, but there were some crazy rumors going on with Fran McCaffrey, and I know some people were wondering what his future would be in Iowa City. We'll see. It seems like he was, you know, he's got a good nucleus potentially coming back next year. So if he were to, I just don't know what other jobs he's going to take elsewhere, unless it's a step down. I mean, there aren't that many openings. But from what I was told from a really good source, that all that stuff that was out there about him wanting to leave, wanting to get out, was total rumor. Nothing was true about it. That was what the source close to the situation told me. And, you know, it doesn't mean for sure that Fran McCaffrey's staying. I mean, there's a lot to unpack here, but I think he, I don't know why he would leave, honestly. I mean, he's got a really good contract. He potentially has a really good nucleus coming back. I mean, if Peyton Sanford comes back, Tyler, you know, that would be outstanding. I mean, Tony Perkins still could come back, even though fans were kind of ripping him the other night. The only people you lose for sure are Ben Kricke and perhaps Patrick McCaffrey. But, you got Cooper Kotch coming in, and, you got some good players coming in. This could be a good nucleus next year.
And you feel like maybe, and maybe it's felt this way for a while, that Owen Freeman can be that next kind of star at Iowa. And Peyton Sanford has kind of given that feel off a little bit as well. But that was kind of one of the storylines coming into the season of, like, you go from Luca Garza to Keegan Murray to Chris Murray, like, who is going to be that guy this season? I'm not sure if that ever really materialized. It felt like maybe in the latter stages of the season, that was Peyton Sanford, and the level that he has played at recently has just been really outstanding. But I think there's a lot of guys you can look at next season that could be that guy, like Josh Dix, I think, has the potential to do so. If Peyton Sanford is back, Owen Freeman, I personally would feel good about what the program, kind of the pieces that it has to build off moving forward. And I will say, so Fran McCaffrey revealed kind of after the game that Tony Perkins and Josh Dix both got hurt in that regular season finale against Illinois. Dix was a hip issue, and Perkins, his arm swelled up to the point where for a day he couldn't dribble, and then for another he couldn't shoot. Both of them kind of, you know, were in the training room, gutted it out versus Ohio State. Obviously, that didn't end up in a win, but I thought that was just kind of emblematic of, like, what Iowa has maybe gone through behind the scenes this season. Like, that wasn't something that was as public, you know, as the Ohio State game went on, because I know Tony Perkins was kind of a target of some criticism in that game. But, you know, the fact that Iowa has, they've dealt with personal loss this season, you know, four players losing their grandparents. There's been just some rough stretches on the court as well, where they went an extended period without winning more than one game in a row. So there's been, you know, I think it's important to take into account, like, there's been hurdles this season. Iowa didn't make the NCAA tournament, but, like, there's been a bunch of factors that have kind of played into this that maybe aren't talked about as much as they should have. So that was, you know, the way that Tony and Josh, I guess, to even be on the court in that Ohio State game, you know, is at least worth bringing up.
Good information, Tyler. Thanks for your hard work all season on the beat. And yeah, good stuff, man. All right, coming up next, Dargan Southard and I will talk about the Iowa women's basketball NCAA tournament draw. You're listening to Hawk Central here on 106.3 KXNO. Welcome back to Hawk Central Radio here on 106.3 KXNO. Thanks to Tyler Tashman for the good men's basketball and football conversation. The last half of our show tonight will be devoted to the Iowa women's basketball team. Of course, we did give you a 45-minute bracket reaction pod on YouTube. If you want to find that still, search Hawk Central on our YouTube page, and or search that to find our YouTube page. And then you can also find an audio edition at hawkcentral.com, or you can even go through my social media feed at Chad Lystico on X. But really, Dargan Southard, my teammate on the Hawkeye women's beat, 45 minutes really wasn't even enough. There are plenty more storylines to discuss ahead of Iowa's 2 p.m. Saturday opener against Team TBD, the 16th seed. You and I like to both look at sportsbook odds, I know. So let's kind of dig into some stuff and learn a little bit more about the Hawkeyes draw. First of all, let's talk about that's – well, no, go ahead. What were you going to say?
I was just going to start, you know, it is, you know, the women's odds kind of trickle out a little slower than the men's odds do, even for the tournament. So we got regional winning odds for all the regionals, but Albany 2 on this one. And so I guess generally summing it up, LSU and Iowa are pretty much even, just a little bit above plus money. So Iowa's, I think I saw at plus 110, LSU at plus 130. But really the biggest surprise to me was how distant of a third UCLA is, because, you know, as we've broken and discussed this bracket, I think we largely feel like, you know, UCLA, LSU could go either way. And, you know, if it's Iowa, UCLA, that could go either way as well. And so, you know, UCLA's in the plus 300 range and even longer odds if you go to some different books. So that seems to be a general theme that, you know, Vegas doesn't seem to be super hot on the Pac-12 as a whole, which is interesting because they were easily the deepest conference this year. So, but Vegas has liked Iowa all year as well. So I guess it's not super surprising to see Iowa as, you know, the favorite, but, you know, pretty distantly ahead of UCLA and everybody else, obviously, in the region as well.
Yeah, I actually want to get into some of those Pac-12 odds as we go here, and I think that gives us a greater context of the type of draw Iowa did get. But I also wanted to ask you, Dargan, before we got too far along, about the first round matchup, because we also didn't have an immediate line when we did our podcast the other day. Because West Virginia Princeton is obviously of the utmost importance to the Hawkeyes, considering that will be the opponent Monday night, presumably on ESPN, when the Hawkeyes advance past their first round game, which should be, I mean, I imagine that spread's going to be in the 30 range, something like that. But
yeah, you might not even be able to get an Iowa money line, I wouldn't think.
But anyway, we're gonna give Iowa the win in the first round game. I know that could be presumptuous, but the second round opponent would be West Virginia or Princeton. What are you seeing on the odds there for that second round matchup?
Yeah, and I think this is a situation where having Vegas and the odds is really helpful, because, you know, you see an 8-9 matchup on paper and think, you know, it's a toss up, and seeding wise it pretty much is. But you know, West Virginia is a little bit of a favorite, 3.5 points, about minus 170 or so on the money line. The total is very low at about 125, 126, somewhere in there. So, you know, I'd say that might just be a lean, with West Virginia being the major conference team and Princeton coming from the Ivy League. But it is interesting that, you know, the 9 seed technically is the favorite here. So, you know, that one will be... I imagine, you know, there'll be some people that stick around for that one after the Iowa game concludes. And so, you know, I don't know if one is necessarily better than the other for Iowa to face, but, it seems like West Virginia is the kind of loose lean so far, in the early going.
Yeah, I know they, but I'm not sure if I'm an Iowa fan, what I would want. I think I would probably lean towards, I don't know. I'd lean towards Princeton, I guess, rooting for them.
I probably would too.
Just because that's they're a slow down team. So yes, they could give Iowa some problems potentially just because of the contrast in styles. But come on, it's Princeton. Iowa's going to be able to run against anybody. You know, Caitlin gets a defensive rebound and off to the races they go. I mean, it's, I just don't see, I feel like that would be the better matchup for Iowa. Whereas West Virginia, it seems like, I know this again, you know, we're not watching West Virginia tape. We haven't had time to do all that yet, but
No. They
do have the defensive player of the year in the Big 12, JJ Quinterly, a junior guard, 5'8", so a little bit shorter than Caitlin Clark, obviously. But, you know, does she get that matchup against her? And does she try to stop Caitlin? It's 5'8", trying to stop Caitlin. Usually doesn't work out well because Caitlin can go down and use her height. This is a team that plays smaller, plays more of Iowa's style. So maybe they just try to outgun Iowa in that sense and out-defend Iowa, essentially. So I guess I would lean towards rooting for Princeton if you're a Hawk fan, but I'm not going to say strongly that Iowa, would do better over one or the other. I feel like it's a good matchup, and if I'm a Hawkeye fan who has tickets for that first game, I'm going to stay and watch that second game. I'd be interested to see who the Hawks are going to face on Monday.
Yeah, and not to just totally break it down as simply as what conference they come from, but West Virginia going through the Big 12, they faced Texas, they faced Ayoka Lee and Kansas State, they faced Oklahoma, even Iowa State. So, the Big 12 was no cakewalk this year. And, on the other side, I know the Ivy League did get two bids, which is pretty crazy to think about with Columbia getting in the play-in game. But this is Princeton, I would imagine, has been largely overpowering most of the teams in their conference for a large chunk of this year. And probably, its tougher matchups came in the non-conference, which was several months ago. So not that can mean anything necessarily, but I do feel like West Virginia is maybe a little less overwhelmed by the moment potentially, coming into what's going to be a very raucous environment on Monday night, just for the tournament stipulations in play, but also with it being Caitlin Clark's last home game. So it feels like maybe West Virginia has been in looser, similar environments more so than probably Princeton has.
Yeah, and I go through West Virginia's schedule, 24-7 record, pretty impressive. But at the same time, I struggle to find a real high quality road.
Yeah,
they
struggled against the top teams in the Big 12 for sure.
Yeah, they lost. They did lose in overtime at K-State, so that's a good comp there, but. I just don't see any road wins, that you would raise your eyebrows at, and that atmosphere on Saturday, on Monday night is going to be, as you said, Caitlin Clark's last game. We know it's her last game Monday night as a Hawkeye at home, and so we've seen electric atmospheres before. I certainly don't think Princeton has seen anything like that, and I doubt West Virginia even has either. So that should play in the Hawkeyes' favor, I would think, but you just can't chalk these up. We've seen Iowa struggle in these 8-9 games in the past, even with Caitlin Clark. So anyway, moving on to some other stuff we wanted to talk about. Let's go into these Pac-12 odds. I'm looking at DraftKings right now. I don't know if in terms of Iowa's region, they've got Iowa plus 100 and LSU plus 165. To win the region, and UCLA plus 140. And then after that, it's K-State at plus 1,800. So, yeah, it is kind of a three-team race. But, yeah, to be a two seed, not in South Carolina's region, and be plus 450 is pretty crazy for UCLA, a Pac-12 team that was right there as the top team in the conference with Stanford all year. So, and it's crazy to also see, Dargan, that the number one seed in the Midwest region is a long shot to win that region. UConn is the betting favorite at plus 130. And then, of course, Stanford is not they're a two seed, but Texas is the favorite in that region, in the Portland 4 region. So not a lot of love there for the Pac-12 schools. What stands out to you in terms of that? And also, would Iowa have been better off going west, given what we're seeing with what Vegas believes, which I believe I put a lot of stock in what they think about teams rather than name brands?
Yeah, and if you look at Iowa's potential path, without a whole lot of stretch, they could go 5-seed Colorado Pac-12 in the Sweet 16, 2-seed UCLA in the Elite Eight Pac-12, and then a Final Four matchup against USC. So, the Pac-12 is kind of right in line with what Iowa could deal with. To me, that's surprising because as I said earlier, the Pac-12 has had easily the most depth of any conference in women's basketball, and not just depth, but high-end depth. You think about you know, all the teams you mentioned, plus Oregon State being up, you know, they're a three seed, and then even Colorado and Utah is as dangerous five. So, you know, I don't know if Vegas thinks that maybe the grueling nature of playing so many ranked teams over and over and over the course of the year is going to work against some of these Pac-12 teams this time of year. I mean, I would think it would be a benefit to have, you know, like Colorado had a stretch where, I mean, they played like five straight games against ranked teams and lost most of them, but still, you know, gained that experience and that going through that. So, you know, I think Iowa, you know, maybe could have been in a slightly better spot bracket wise. But, you know, I think Iowa should feel good about where it's at and what is kind of being projected for them, because, you know, it definitely feels like Iowa is, you know, Vegas is kind of picked to win this regional, or at least be, you know, right there to win it. And so, you know, I don't know. It feels like UCLA has a lot of value on it. Even if you, you know, even if they got to the Elite Eight, you know, you could hedge that out from plus 450 to what a Iowa money line would probably be at that point, which Iowa would probably be the favorite against UCLA, but not an overwhelming favorite. So it'll be interesting to see if any, you know, what Vegas feels like materializes. And I would say in general, you know, there's a lot more discrepancy and movement in the women's basketball lines than the men's basketball lines. So to see some discrepancy here and there is not super surprising, but to see it be that drastic and that consistent across the board for the Pac-12 teams was pretty surprising to see.
Yeah, and I'm just looking at, again, I know we're getting kind of into the weeds here in sports gambling, but to reach the Sweet 16, Iowa is minus 1,600 on DraftKings. I don't know what. So that gives you a sense of how heavy a favorite Iowa is to advance. Now, again, public perception does play into some of these odds. It's not necessarily, you know, they're like, oh, because, you know, if they were like minus 700, people would jump all over it, you know. But interestingly, like UCLA is only minus 350 to make the Sweet 16, Dargan.
Yeah.
You know, Oregon State's minus 200 to make the Sweet 16. Again, this good signs of Pac-12 skepticism, you know, I should, yeah, you know, you should say. So, but it also gives you a little bit of a comfort, I guess, that Iowa, you know, has a very, very good chance to make the Sweet 16, according to the odds makers.
Yeah, minus 1,600. That's a little surprising.
That's, you know, absurd. I mean,
yeah,
I would take, you know, you could take no if they offered it, you know, like right. plus they probably would offer plus 900 maybe.
If you're lucky. 1,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, go ahead.
But I mean, especially just with how tough the second round games have been for Iowa the last few years. Now, I fully believe that Iowa going through that has benefited them, and they're not going to, you know, be overlooking anything before the Sweet 16. But, you know, the Creighton game obviously went the way it did, and the Georgia game was uncomfortable for a long time. So definitely kind of fits what has happened all year long. And you've seen, you know, I know you and I maybe are a few of the people that have monitored the spreads game by game for Iowa, but they've been very pro Iowa, and to Iowa's credit, they've covered a lot of them that have seen, you know, absurd at the beginning. So, but yeah, minus 1600. I mean, that's you know, that's roughly like what, you know, some of the two seeds are favored over the 15 seeds on the men's side. So if you want to kind of pair that up as equal likeliness of happening, that's kind of a way to do it. So, you know, I will say one thing about the Pac-12 is there are so many good teams that, you know, all of them aren't going to go on runs, and there's going to be at least a couple of them that probably lose before you would say they were expected to. But to kind of see it all across the board is definitely very surprising, especially with, like you said, USC, you know, for the three seed to be the betting favorite, even though I know it's UConn, on the women's side, I can't imagine that has happened very often or at all.
No,
you know,
not in the women's game. No. So that's very intriguing. And, So here's my final four, Dargan, and it won't surprise you because I go with all the betting favorites. It would be South Carolina, Texas, UConn, and Iowa. So I've got one, a one, a three, and a one. Those are the betting favorites. Any differences for you and any sleeper teams maybe you like in this women's bracket?
That's a good question. I mean, I feel South Carolina's pretty much you can write them in. I do think that the USC, UConn, Ohio State, that's maybe the most, to me, seems the most wide open. You know, I know a lot of people are going to kind of write Ohio State off, you know, how they ended the Big Ten tournament in the regular season, but that's a team that didn't lose for, you know, almost 3 months. And so I could see, you know, any of those three teams coming out of that one. And then, you know, Texas, I feel like is in position to maybe struggle a little bit. So I guess I would probably say if I was picking one, I would go South Carolina, Stanford, Iowa, and I'll go USC. So okay. I do not share Vegas's Pac-12 skepticism, I guess.
Yeah. Well, one more intriguing little betting line thing that I thought was kind of interesting also on DraftKings is the – I got to find it now. It was the winter specials, okay? The Albany 2, if you want to just pick the whoever wins Albany 2 to win the title, you can get plus 350, which I kind of like because then you're going to probably get Iowa or LSU, and I like whoever wins that region to win – to go to the championship game at that point. So then you could maybe hedge or whatever. The other thing, I still believe that again going against South Carolina is, I think you can get about plus 110 or plus 115-ish, depending on where you look, not South Carolina to win the title. I like that bet a lot because there's a lot. You have to win six, even as good as South Carolina is. They replaced five starters off last year's team, and – I mean, give me 63, give me 67 other teams, but give me like nine other viable championship contenders against one. Give me plus money. And I think I take that.
Well, and to kind of put it into comparison, I remember distinctly last year seeing South Carolina's odds going into the tournament, and they were even more in favor. I think they were like minus 200 to win it all last year before the tournament started. And obviously that didn't materialize. So,
right.
I don't know.
And that was with a juggernaut team. I mean, this is not the same team.
Right, exactly. So, you know, I think that puts in perspective, you know, how much the anything can happen mantra has certainly picked up more legitimacy on the women's side. But I don't know. I mean, if South Carolina didn't have the face plant last year, I would feel more inclined that may happen this year, but and I'm you know, taking even money for the field is still a good bet, but I kind of have a hard time seeing South Carolina, you know, not getting it done again just based on how last year was supposed to be a sure thing and it wasn't. So I don't know. I mean, you know, South Carolina has had, you know, they showed a little bit of vulnerability in the SEC tournament, you know, needing some heroics there. So, I don't know.
Well, I agree.
That'll certainly be the 1A and 1B storyline with Caitlin.
Yeah. I think, I don't know. I would go anti South Carolina there just because there's so many ways that could fall apart. Only a couple minutes left here, Dargan, so we're kind of running out of time. But, you know, we got carried away with some of the sportsbook talk. No problems there. Hopefully our degenerate listeners enjoyed that conversation. But
I'm sure someone did.
I want to give – I'm not trying to plug my own story here, but when I went through Caitlin Clark's numbers going in the NCAA tournament, I posted that column on Tuesday morning at Hawk Central. It was pretty amazing, the stuff that she – still can set. We know about the scoring record. She's at 3,771 points. I don't know if you got a chance to read that article, but there are some pretty notable records that she can still hit. And I'll tick off a few of them here, Dargan. 1,109 points is the single season NCAA record. She needs 56 to pass that. She has 1,054, which is tied for fifth all time. And we haven't even hit the post NCAA tournament yet.
Yeah, I think she's going to get that one.
Yeah. This is interesting, and I actually didn't know this until I started digging into it. Her career scoring average is 28.35 points per game. The NCAA Division I record is 28.38 points per game, set by Mississippi Valley State's Patricia Hoskins way back in the 80s. And obviously, Caitlin Clark is playing much more difficult competition than Miss Hoskins did. No offense to her in any way, shape, or form. But even so, she could still set that record here, as I put it, by averaging about 29.5 points per game in, say, four games in the tournament. So that's kind of interesting that she could end up
getting that one too.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, she's already got the career single season 3-point record in the NCAA, crushed it. She's already 11 past Steph Curry, by the way, as well, for the men's record with 173 threes, Dargan, this year. She could hit 200 3-pointers this year. Think about that. Like a 600-point season for somebody is a lot.
Yeah.
She could do that with threes this year. It's not that far-fetched. She only needs 27. She averages more than about five a game. I think 5.24 per game this year, which is kind of crazy to think about. But here's the other one. With 18 more threes, Dargan, she can pass the NCAA career record set by Oklahoma's Taylor Robertson, who did it in 5 years. This is Caitlin's fourth year, as we all know. So, you know, not to make it about one player because this is a team thing, but still, Caitlin could really leave her mark, and we saw her do that last year in the NCAA tournament with, you know, tournament records left and right.
I think two things with a lot of those numbers stand out for me. One is, you know, as good as she was last year, and she was great last year, she has found a way to be better this year, which is, you know, pretty incredible to think about because there wasn't much room to get better, to be honest. So that is noteworthy. And to me, it's just how many of these marks that should be, you know, jaw-dropping, and they are jaw-dropping, but it's kind of just like, yeah, that makes sense, you know. Career scoring average, single season scoring average record, most threes, you know, just the way that she is normalized, just stats and records and marks that shouldn't be normalized at all. It feels like the most incredible thing because, like you said, the scoring record obviously took center stage and rightfully so, but there are so many other marks on the scoring side, on the assist side. Even the rebounding side, you know, as high as she's climbed in program history there, that are all just, you know, part of the legacy, part of the ability to just make the basketball game look incredibly easy. All of it has just ended and or is about to end with, you know, an incredible career that probably won't be matched, you know, maybe ever.
Exactly. So much going on in these next few days, Dargan. Are you going to the 16 versus 16 game at Carver on Thursday?
Tempting. I did discover that if UT Martin wins on Thursday, the crowd that they will be playing in front of on Saturday will be larger than the entire population of Martin, Tennessee. So
good stat. From our Tennessee native here.
Yeah. Well, Martin, Tennessee is in Northwest Tennessee, which is about as wasteland as you can find in the state.
Ouch, so it's, ouch.
Yeah. Well, I'm not the only one. I'm an East Tennessean, so we sometimes have some beef with some West Tennessee. But the point being, there's less than, I think, 11,000 people in Martin, and obviously there'll be around 15 there on Saturday. So we didn't talk about the UT Martin Holy Cross odds. Which I think...
Give them to me quick because we got to run. What's the line there?
Minus 115 for UT Martin, minus 105.
Oh, wow. It's going to be a... It's going to be a...
A riveting...
It's going to be a tussle.
Yeah, over-under of 117. So
I should
was
be
almost
a doozy.
Hit that a couple times.
Should be a doozy. All right, thanks, Dargan. I'll see you Friday.
Sounds good.
All right, busy 5 days ahead from Carver Hawkeye Arena. First four on Thursday night, as I mentioned. Then we've got Friday interviews and open practice, Saturday's game, Sunday media, Monday night's game, presumably, assuming Iowa doesn't stub its toe. This is Chad Lystico saying so long, and we will catch you next Wednesday night here on Hawk Central. Thanks for listening, 106.3 KXNO. Good night, everyone.